all countries are facing a delicate balance between protecting their people while minimizing the social and economic damage.
The World Health Organization suggests what might come next for the COVID-19 pandemic. This is Tuesday, June 23rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, some countries are stepping back their pandemic restrictions. COVID-19 might have contributed to what some consider a disappointing campaign event for the U.S. president. And we will explore the increasing tensions between North and South Korea. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The World Health Organization Sunday reported a global jump of 183,000 new confirmed COVID-19 cases, the largest single-day increase it's recorded since the pandemic began. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Monday, the greatest threat now is not the virus itself, but rather the lack of global solidarity and leadership. We cannot defeat this pandemic with a divided world, he said.
Some countries are continuing to see a rapid increase in cases and deaths. Some countries that have successfully suppressed transmission are now seeing an upswing in cases as they reopen their societies and economies. All countries are facing a delicate balance between protecting their people while minimizing the social and economic damage. It's not a choice between lives and livelihoods. Countries can do both. We urge countries to be careful and creative in finding solutions that people stay safe while getting on with their lives. We continue to urge all countries to double down on the fundamental public health measures that we know work. Finding and testing suspected cases works. Isolating and caring for the sick works. Tracing and quarantining contacts works. And protecting health workers works. At the same time, these measures can only be effective if each and every individual takes the measures that we also know work to protect themselves and others. Maintain physical distance, continue cleaning your hands, and wear a mask where appropriate.
WHO officials have said for several weeks now the focus of the outbreak is in the Americas, and the numbers showed a one-day rise of more than 116,000 cases in that region Sunday. Brazil led with nearly 55,000 new cases, followed by the United States with more than 36,000, and India with about 15,000 new cases. Quite a few countries have stepped back their reopenings. That story in just a moment. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Thai scientists administered a second dose of an experimental COVID-19 vaccine to monkeys on Monday, looking for another positive response to enable clinical trials in humans to start as early as October. Spiraling tensions between India and China over rival claims to territory in the icy Himalayas could push New Delhi to embrace closer ties with the United States and countries like Japan and Australia. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies is opening two new isolation field hospitals in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Increasing numbers of cases of COVID-19 have forced the Australian state of Victoria to bring back tougher restrictions beginning Monday. New infections over the past 2 days have been at their highest for 2 months. A state of emergency has also been extended. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Most of Victoria's new coronavirus cases are linked to clusters, often within extended families. Other larger groups of infections have been detected at two hotels in the city of Melbourne. Community transmission of the virus, rather than those infections acquired overseas by citizens who then returned home, is of great concern to health officials. They're advising Australians to stay away from six COVID-19 hotspots in the Victorian state capital, while residents are being urged to remain at home. Authorities want to set up so-called rings of containment around localised outbreaks. In neighbouring New South Wales, officials are recommending citizens reconsider travel to Melbourne. Various lockdown measures have gradually been eased across Australia in recent weeks, but officials in Victoria are blaming complacency for a spike in cases. Limits on indoor and outdoor gatherings have now been reintroduced. Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews says the community still needs to be vigilant.
It is unacceptable that families anywhere in our state can, just because they want this to be over, pretend that it is. It is not over. We have even had people who have tested positive and have been told to go home and isolate, and instead they have gone to work.
Police officers are to step up their enforcement of the restrictions on group gatherings, particularly in Melbourne. Checks will also increase on people who've been told to self-isolate because they tested positive for the disease or were a close contact of someone who had. A positive test also prompted the cancellation of an Australian rules football match in Melbourne following the recent resumption of games. Australia has recorded just over 7,400 coronavirus cases. Most patients have recovered, but 102 people have died. The country's international borders were closed to foreign nationals in March. Widespread testing and contact tracing have helped Australia mostly contain the virus, but strict lockdown measures have inflicted great damage to the economy. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Afghanistan security forces have suffered their bloodiest week so far in the 19-year-old Afghan war. The Afghanistan's National Security Council said 291 members of Afghan National and Defense Security Forces were killed and 550 others wounded in multiple Taliban attacks last week. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. As protests against racial discrimination continue in many American cities, President Donald Trump returned to the campaign trail in Tulsa, Oklahoma. As VOA's Kane Farabaugh reports, the desire to get back to a sense of normalcy across the country is tempered by a spike of COVID-19 cases in many U.S. states.
Before a crowd of thousands of supporters at the Bank of Oklahoma Center in Tulsa, President Donald Trump acknowledged the increasing number of coronavirus cases in the country.
When you do testing to that extent, you're going to find more people. You're going to find more cases.
The president's desire to get the country opened back up after months of restrictions was met with enthusiastic support by those attending his rally.
Let's open the schools, please. Open.
As health officials continue to monitor the growing number of COVID-19 infections, gatherings and protests against racial discrimination and police brutality continue across the country, with demonstrators removing statues, including those honoring Confederate leaders from the U.S. Civil War. U.S. Senator from South Carolina, Republican Tim Scott, who is working to draft police reform legislation, says more funding to law enforcement agencies, not less, is needed at the federal level.
If you want officers to be trained effectively, you have to give them the tools called training to get there. That requires more resources. We know that if you want more information on the federal level, that requires more resources for record keeping.
Scott also says federal funding would ensure law enforcement agencies follow the legislation.
It is important for us to use the resources that we provide to law enforcement in a way to get them to compel them towards the direction that we think is in the best interest of the nation, of the communities that they serve, and frankly, of the officers themselves.
As lawmakers continue to work to reform law enforcement practices both political parties can agree on, it comes at a time when much of Washington is digesting the revelations in former National Security Advisor John Bolton's book, The Room Where It Happened, offering an insider look at the Trump administration. The book is an unflattering portrayal of President Trump's leadership.
But I think that that lack of touch, that lack of sensibility and judgment that Trump, that John Bolton talks about, you can see in his handling of the public protests after George Floyd's murder 3 weeks ago.
White House advisor Peter Navarro dismisses many of the accusations Bolton makes in his book.
He got fired because he did not obey the chain of command, because his views were totally out of sync with President Donald J. Trump with respect to how to handle international affairs. And he's basically breaking all manner of tradition in terms of issuing a book at this stage. And he's going to make a bunch of money.
The Department of Justice tried to block the release of Bolton's book over concerns it contained classified information. But a federal judge ruled Saturday the publication's release could move forward. Kane Farbaugh, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen said Monday his ruling party would be a dominant force in politics for as long as a century, telling the opposition it should wait until the next life if it wants to take power. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. North Korea said on Monday it has readied thousands of balloons and millions of leaflets in preparation for what they call retaliatory punishment against South Korea. The detail in a state media report came a day after the North said it was preparing to begin an anti-South leaflet campaign following a series of vitriolic condemnations of Seoul because of anti-North leaflets floated over the border. Joining us on VOA Asia is Korea expert Evans Revere. He has served as Acting Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs and Deputy Chief of Mission in the U.S. Embassy in Seoul. Evans, is this all about leaflets?
No, I don't think so. There's been a lot of rhetoric on both sides about leaflets and balloons and pamphlets and propaganda. But quite frankly, the leaflet war has been going on for many, many years. It is no more intense or indeed less intense than it's ever been. And so this is about much more than leaflets. It's fundamentally about North Korea's attempt to, I guess the phrase I'd like to use is to intrude on South Korea's sovereignty by blackmailing or extorting South Korea by forcing South Korea to choose. Do you want dialogue with us? And if you want dialogue with us, here are the things that you will have to do. And it's a long list. The list began with a North Korean demand that South Korea stop the flights of these balloons and this pamphleteering going across the border, but has since escalated dramatically. With North Korea making all sorts of demands and accusations, et cetera. So it's about a lot more than leaflets and pamphlets.
So where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, what you've seen now is an escalation of rhetoric and demands from North Korea that began with a request to cease and desist the balloon flights. A request that South Korea, the Blue House in South Korea, essentially agreed to. And then once the North Koreans saw that they managed to get traction with this small bit of blackmail of South Korea, once again intruding on South Korea's sovereignty, so you now have North Korea making demands about how South Korea is going to treat its own citizens, the North Koreans then began to escalate and then began to say, we're going to cut off this, that, or the other element of bilateral relations and dialogue and cooperation and the reconciliation process unless you do a lot more. And what the North Koreans are really after is, I think, to drive a wedge between Seoul and Washington. They're trying to see how far they can push Seoul into giving up other elements of its sovereignty, into disregarding U.S. concerns and international concerns and easing sanctions and pressures, et cetera. And so that's the process that we're in right now. It's hard to know how far it will go because a lot depends on how South Korea decides to react to all of this. The South Koreans recently have shown some backbone and are pushing back against the North Koreans and saying this is unacceptable. Let's go back to our original agreements. But the North Koreans are convinced that South Korea is a soft target. And so I think you are likely to see the North Koreans continue to up the ante within certain limits as they continue to try to pressure Seoul into caving.
Evans Revere served as Acting Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs, and as well as being Deputy Chief of Mission in the U.S. Embassy in Seoul. As always, Evan, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Can the coronavirus survive in cold weather? Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you're sick or advised to by local authorities. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
VOA Asia continues. Precautions to avoid the spread of the coronavirus remain in effect in parts of the world spiking with COVID cases. The United States by far has the most cases, and businesses must adapt to stay alive. VOA's Arash Arabasadi shows us a gym that's open for socially distant exercise.
Welcome to the current state of exercise at a gym in California's Redondo Beach.
Pre-COVID, we had no pods and barriers at all, obviously, and now it was tough for us to reopen again because a lot of our clients aren't comfortable just coming back to the normal stuff we usually do.
Pete Sapson owns Inspire South Bay Fitness. His industry is hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic. He says he tested workouts on Zoom with people wearing masks, but breathing proved the challenge. So his wife designed these plastic dividers and walls.
And I said, okay, let's do it. We could do it with pipes, shower curtains, and voila, here it is. Now, so now there is a extra protection. So it's not protecting 100% from COVID, but it's just a layer to make everybody feel more comfortable.
Skeptical at first, Sapson says he jumped on board when he saw the blueprints. He says producing the plastic pods may have saved his business, even if it meant reducing class size from 24 to 9.
It was devastating for us shutting down for 3 months. If we had to shut down for an extra month, we don't know if we can reopen again. Running a successful business is already hard as it is. We have to kind of push the limits a little bit and come up with this solution just to get back on our feet.
Inspire South Bay Fitness is one of the country's 30 million small businesses teetering on uncertainty amid the pandemic. Creative problem solving, Sapson says, may save the present as he looks to a future without social distancing and without the pods. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Washington, D.C. is gradually easing out of its COVID lockdown as non-essential businesses start opening for locals and tourists. Kieda Kostrecki talked with D.C. residents and tourists to see how they feel about cautious reopening.
The wharf, a popular spot by the Potomac River, used to be filled with locals and tourists before the pandemic hit the U.S. Today, as the nation's capital starts to slowly ease out of the lockdown, people are back, though there are no crowds and everyone seems cautious.
People might still get sick and we might have a second wave, and I also really want to make sure that people are, you know, getting the economic opportunities that they deserve and that people are getting taken care of. So it's a mixed bag, I imagine.
D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser said on June 17th that after 13 days of sustained decline of community spread, she expects the city to move to phase two of reopening in just a few days, which will allow gatherings of 50 people and many non-essential retail stores, restaurants, and places of worship, among others, to reopen at 50% capacity.
That we are trending in the right direction in each of these. Community spread at 13 days, low transmission rate, we have achieved positivity rate, we have achieved. Also, for sufficient health care capacity, we have achieved, and we are trending in the right direction for contact tracing.
Michael Obindu is from Nigeria. He just graduated from Howard University with a master's degree in finance. He says he feels grateful, especially after 3 months of strict lockdown when businesses were shut down and unemployment skyrocketed.
But the fact that we're getting there is really, really, hopeful for people like me, recent graduate, looking for jobs and stuff like that.
Khalid Benghalem drove to D.C. from Florida with his family and says it is unusual to see the city so quiet, especially in the summer.
And I'm used to D.C. being busy with people. When we came in, it was like not a lot of people, and everybody was, we felt kind of safe, actually, especially with things going on in Florida with the spike, and here everybody, you know, they had their mask and they taking the distances, which was great.
Bengalem's daughter, Hannah, has just finished her freshman year, and like most students, had switched to online learning in the last few months.
And it kind of gets lonely when we're at home, but the teachers still get to post stuff, and we do learn, but it's not the same face-to-face.
And while people seem to be venturing out more and enjoying the warm weather, most still prefer to take it easy, unsure of what the pandemic still has in store. Keda Kostrezi, VOA News, Washington.
A nonprofit organization called People Animals Love has a free after-school program where kids read out loud to therapy dogs in 30 libraries in the Washington, D.C. area. But after the coronavirus pandemic closed public spaces, PAL began offering the reading sessions virtually over the video conferencing platform Zoom. As we hear from VOA's Deborah Block, the kids get to enjoy the dogs while improving their reading at the same time.
Hello, everyone. We're excited to see you.
The participants do a meet and greet.
Cosmo is a 3.5-year-old golden retriever.
Before going into virtual breakout rooms. There, the children read to PAL dogs and their owners for 30 minutes.
Nice.
Spending 15 minutes with two different pups. So far, 250 kids have signed up for the sessions, which keep growing to keep up with the demand.
I think the program has been popular because it's something that is new and it's exciting. It's fun.
Is that a unicorn?
And that's also true for 6-year-old Lucy, who hopes Hammy enjoyed today's story.
I think he understood it because my book was about, because it was about animals.
Hayworth says the program helps kids enhance their reading skills and gain self-confidence.
It's awesome to just have an audience that isn't judging. It doesn't care if you mispronounce a word.
As word got around about PAL Zoom reading program, children from elsewhere in the United States and from Canada began signing up for the sessions. This includes 8-year-old Lincoln from Richmond, Virginia, who is reading The Cat in the Hat to Krusty and PAL volunteer Carrie Shepherds.
I love it.
I know some good games we could play, said the cat. I know some new tricks, said the Cat in the Hat.
I like the rhymes. The dogs really want mostly pictures and not words.
Lincoln's mother says her son perks up when he reads to the dogs.
I noticed, especially after the first time, how happy and confident he seemed to feel.
Even after the Washington area libraries reopen, Hayworth plans to continue the virtual program.
Would you hold up your book?
We expect kids to continue from all over the country, and potentially the world. And we look forward to one day welcoming dogs from around the country.
Hey, Layla. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Poppleboon, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.